How did you, at 11 years old, end up experiencing homelessness? Did you live in a pretty trauma-filled environment as a young person?
I would say so. I had a lot of trauma going on. I lived with my mom, who's a single mom, and there were a lot of different issues. I had a lot of issues because I just didn't feel like I was having good attention. I had a lot of problems in school. I had lots of trauma at school. I just didn't feel like I really fit in anywhere. I used to get beat up by kids all the time, and it just felt like I needed to leave and figure out myself, even though I was really, really young.
Hello, I'm Paul Munier, the Executive Director of the Youth Intervention Programs Association, and I'm a youth worker at heart. I love to talk with youth workers from around the globe because I think the whole world should be hearing their stories. Together, we'll learn how their life experiences shape their work with young people. Welcome to this edition of The Passionate Youth Worker. Hi, everybody. For this episode, we're joined by Rose Sargent from California, United States. Rose is the manager of prevention and outreach at Larkin Street Youth Services, which helps young people experiencing homelessness in the San Francisco area. It's an organization that's been around for a long time, since 1984, and they've given more than 75,000 young people a safe place to kind of rebuild their lives. Rose, I know you've been a big part of a lot of those 75,000 people, so thank you for joining us for this episode of the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Paul.
Well, it's wonderful to have you here and to learn more about you and your passion for helping young people. If it's okay with you, I'm hoping we can kind of back up a little bit. And how did you get into youth work in the first place? What was your path into doing this work at Larkin Street?
So my path was a little tumultuous. When I was a kid, I was homeless. I actually was in San Francisco for quite a while, and I used Larkin Street Youth Services when I was a kid. When I was in between 11 to 18, I was kind of on the streets, hopping back and forth from San Francisco and Berkeley and going up and down the California and Oregon coast. Yeah, I used their services, and it ended up impacting me to when I got my stuff together and finally got my GED and then went to college. A month after I graduated, I saw that there was a position that opened up for Larkin Street, and I just had an aha moment where I was all like, oh man, I used to go there. Why don't I apply? That would be really great.
Wow. So you went on and got a degree in psychology, I know, and you weren't thinking about working with youth experiencing homelessness at that time. What were you thinking of doing with that degree? Did you have some other route you were going to travel down?
So initially, I was thinking of trying to start my own practice. Oh. Like when I graduated with my bachelor's, I was planning on maybe getting like a mental health worker position somewhere and like starting to do an apprenticeship, hopefully somewhere to like start working on my master's. But yeah, I don't know what it was. Like I had a moment where I was job searching and I just saw it and it called to me. And I just had a moment in my soul where I was like, I need to apply for this. I need to just try to get this job because that's where I was homeless at. Like, let's just try.
Wow, how cool. And I take it that it was a good fit because you've been doing that now for a while. I bet you have no regrets about working with young people. As I've gotten to know you, I can tell you're very passionate and supportive of them.
Yeah, definitely. I have no regrets whatsoever. I think I actually landed where I needed to be in my life. I feel like for once in my life, I'm like on the right track, doing the right work and affecting the right people.
Wow, that's great to hear. And I would like to even back up a little bit further, if you don't mind, and feel free to not answer some of these questions if they're too sensitive. But how did you, at 11 years old, end up experiencing homelessness? Did you live in a pretty trauma-filled environment as a young person?
I would say so. I had a lot of trauma going on. I like lived with my mom, who's a single mom, and there were a lot of different issues. I had a lot of issues because I just didn't feel like I was having good attention. I had a lot of problems in school. I had like lots of trauma at school. I just didn't feel like I really fit in anywhere. Mm-hmm. I used to get beat up by kids all the time, and it just felt like I needed to leave and figure out myself, even though I was really, really young. I just felt like I couldn't deal with the world on where I was.
That's interesting. At 11 years old, you would take that on yourself and say, I need to kind of branch out and explore this all by myself. Did you have, when you were that age or even younger, like mentors in your life, people that you could turn to?
Not really. Actually, it was really weird when I ended up leaving was a friend of my brother's, and my brother's a little bit older than me, I think like 10, maybe 10 years older than me. He had a conversation with me where he was like, you seem like you're miserable. Do you want to get out of here? I'll take you to San Francisco. And I knew at that moment, I was like, yes, I want to go. Like, I can't stand being here. I would like run away to my friends' houses and like try to not come home as much as possible. But I knew at that moment I was going to go somewhere else.
Hmm. And when you got to San Francisco, and you said you were 11 then when you were first in San Francisco by yourself on your own.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even imagine, Rose, that to me, that would be so intimidating. What was that like for you?
It was kind of exciting. I was getting to see new things and new people. And my first night being in Golden Gate Park, I got detained by cops like instantly and ended up getting sent to a wayward house. Yeah. And after the cops left, I just left and ended up making friends with another girl who was underage. And she kind of tried to show me the ropes and tell me not to trust a lot of people. And it was just kind of a blur for a while.
So you found you were energized by that. You see, it was almost like a new beginning for you. Even at that early age, you wanted to kind of branch out and start all over. And the reason that you had to not trust people, is that because there was victimizers out there looking for people like you? And
yeah, definitely. There's a lot of people when I was out there that were just looking for, you know, new kids, how to get whatever they needed. It was very need-based, that people victimize each other because they need something. And I was fresh meat. So, like, I'm happy that I had this girl who went by the name Sunshine that was like, yeah, you just need to watch out. I was 6'4". And big at the time, so I didn't look like I was really young, so that was kind of nice.
Yeah.
And I shaved off all my hair so I could kind of look like a boy, which made it a little bit easier. But it was definitely like trying not to get too close to people and making sure that I was always aware of what was going on around me.
And did you ever have times when you thought, I should just go back to living with my mom? Or was it just a decision that you made and you never really looked back?
Yeah, it was just a decision I made. I never really like had the want to go back. I really wanted to experience life for myself and figure out if I could make a difference in my own life and be able to control my own life. I didn't want it to be controlled by anybody else anymore or any other situations except for ones that I put myself in.
Sure.
And I think it worked out for me pretty well, but it doesn't work out for everyone.
Mm-hmm. And do you still have a relationship with your mom?
I do. I actually have a great relationship with my mom.
Cool.
Where we're really good friends. We've worked through a lot of trauma. We've worked through a lot of problems. And I think that comes from me being on the street and being able to have that space away from her and her have the space away from me so that we could figure out each other in a different way.
Yeah. And are you still close with your brother, too? Your brother that is about 10 years older than you?
Not really. Other than my mom and my stepdad and one of my sisters, I kind of keep arms away from my family.
Well, thank you for sharing that. It's hard for me, and I bet you a lot of listeners who have never experienced homelessness, to understand how an 11-year-old could do that. But I think you've helped me clarify that you just wanted to get out on your own. There was trauma you need to get away from. And you're willing to take a chance. I kind of, you know, as we were getting to know each other, we were talking about your interests and things, and you are an artistic person. You like to express yourself. You like to try new things. And so it's not too surprising that you had the courageousness and the drive to just kind of find life on your own from the very early age.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was just something that, I don't know, was like a calling to me that I just needed to to do my own thing. And I guess I've always been on that since I was a kid, that I'm just like, I'm going to figure things out and I'm going to try to do different things and figure out my passions and what I like. And even at times where, you know, people get like writer's block or artist blocks, I'll just go out and try to do something new and different so that I can find passion in my life.
And how do you think that your experiences help you in your youth work today? Do you carry a lot of the things you learned forward in your work with young people?
I definitely do. I think it helps me immensely because I can relate and kind of take a step back and give youth their autonomy and understand that they're out here wanting to be their own person, and that I don't need to be their adult. I don't need to try to act like their parent. And I also don't need to act like I know what's best for them, because I don't. They know what's best for them. I just need to try to help them figure that out.
Wow, that's cool. And I think that's true for young people across the board. I know you can't generalize all young people, you know, into a group and everything like that, but young people who are experiencing homelessness, do you think that's the if you were to put a common denominator to it, do you think it's that they're looking for autonomy, they're looking for something that allows them to be an individual? Or, let me rephrase it. If you were to say, what is a common denominator of young people experiencing homelessness, what would you say that is?
I think the common denominator definitely would be that they've dealt with something in their life where they have felt like they're under somebody else's control, and they needed to feel like they could make decisions for themselves finally.
So your experience has definitely helped you to help them, because you kind of understand what they're going through. But how do they perceive you then? Do you talk about your own experiences with them?
So it's kind of funny that even if I didn't want to self-disclose, I kind of don't have the option of that, because I still have some friends that I was homeless with on the streets. They tend to tell my business to clients and youth. And that's okay, because I don't hide anything. There's nothing for me to hide. And it's actually given me the ability to have better connections with youth, of where, and I don't know in your career of working with youth, but some will try to lie about situations, and I just kind of deadpan stare at them and go, you know that I was a kid once, right? That, like, I get this. You can't really lie to me. I've been there. And it opens up a way better, honest communication with them.
What do you think your main attribute as a youth worker is? What can you do that's really unique and special in this field that everything you've gone through has taught you?
So I think something that I'm even trying to work with right now is changing programming to really fit the needs and gaps and services. Because I just sit there and go, like, what could have happened for me that would have changed my life and gotten me off the streets? And I can think of pivotal moments in my life where maybe somebody might have stepped in and done mentorship, or there was a program or service that might have changed it. So I get to try to work with my agency and coming up with ideas of how, having to like figure out where those gaps are and hopefully filling those gaps, so where we can get youth in those pivotal moments and try to navigate them into individualism in a healthy manner.
I remember when I was first starting in this field, there was an author, I can't think of his name right now. I've tried to look it up and I can't find it. But he talked about social autopsies of young people. If you would go back and you'd look at all these pivotal points in somebody's life, that if there would have just been the right support or the right intervention at that time, it could have changed everything. And so I think what you're trying to do is find those gaps and find those pivotal moments and be sure that there's somebody there at that point to provide that support or encouragement to help them, is really an important thing that you're trying to do.
Definitely. I think that's the biggest thing that I aim for in community, is like trying to navigate youth's integral moments of when they really need that support that might change their mind, that society is not a horrible society, that there are people that really care out there.
What do you mean by integral moments? That was interesting.
Well, with youth development, there are like moments where their brains are changing and their ego and IDs, you know, their internal person starts to change. And I think it's really at those moments that we get to have a great effect on, like, you can be unique, love tattoos and punk rock music, and still be a part of society and still be cared about. You can have a mohawk and still be cared about. You can have tons of face piercings and face tattoos. That still doesn't mean that you're a bad throwaway person in society.
How cool. And I dream of that kind of day when we can just accept people for who they are. And if we really have a mindset that the diversity of people is really what makes us great as a species, right? To be able to experience different things with different people. I think it's so cool that you're helping young people who are really struggling with that, finding their niche and helping them find their niche through putting services in place and building those relationships with them.
Yeah.
So definitely. Rose, we do have to take a short break. When we come back, though, I'd like to ask you a whole bunch more questions. So we'll be right back after this short break.
No matter how you support our young people, the Professional Youth Worker powered by YIPA has your training and learning needs covered. Visit training.yipa.org. That's training.yipa.org to see for yourself, and then join the thousands of youth workers around the globe who learn from our easy-to-access exceptional trainings. From our blogs to our podcast, the Professional Youth Worker is your go-to resource for tools to help you keep going, keep learning, and keep growing. Members enjoy free unlimited access to live online and on-demand trainings and a preferred discount pricing for our one-of-a-kind certificate course. Annual memberships are just $99 for individuals and only $250 for your entire organization. Visit training.yipa.org today to learn more. That's training.yipa.org.
And we're back with Rose Sargent from California. She is the Prevention and Outreach Manager at Larkin Street in San Francisco, an organization that works with youth experiencing homelessness. Rose, right before the break, we were talking about those pivotal moments where we work with young people and intervene with them. Have you had any moments like that recently in your work where you've just seen a light bulb go off on a young person where you kind of had that connection or they started seeing things differently? Can you think of anything like that?
They happen quite often because I try to have really deep conversations with youth of, like, getting to be like, well, you know, why are you doing the same thing every day? Like, what is going to get you to the point where you want to do something different? And I had a youth come up to me recently that was just like, I'm tired of sleeping outside. It's cold all the time. And I was like, oh, really? Well, do you want to go into housing? Because I can get you in like 4 days. And they just had a moment where they were like, yes. And they had never like wanted to be inside beforehand. So it was just one of those moments of like, you can tell when a youth says certain things and it's them reaching out to you to ask for help. And you got to figure out their cryptic words and how they're talking to be all like, okay, I'm going to offer this to you. And I think it's this time that you're going to take it. But I'd rather offer them a million times and them say no every time, except for that one pivotal moment where they're all like, yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah. What does that mean to you when you have that moment? What is your internal reaction like?
I get really giddy, and I also start to think of wraparound services. Like, how can I help this transition be healthy for them? How can it be the less traumatic, stigmatizing option? What kind of other services can we offer them to make sure that they get to have a good transition inside?
Yeah. So if you find, for example, continuing with your story of a young person that's tired of being outside, it's cold, and if you get them into housing, then do you find like they're more trusting with you to maybe take another step? It's all incremental, I think. Do you find like that's a real moment of trust building?
I do. I think when they, because it's a point of vulnerability for them, right? That they're being vulnerable to asking for help. And I take that as them trusting me with their emotions and their vulnerability. And I really try to hold that to like the utmost care. And I think they realize that because I'm like, great, cool. What else can I do for you? And then all of a sudden they'll start being all like, I want to go to college. I want to get my high school diploma. I want to work on my mental health. I want to work on all these things. And it's just getting to really have a moment in my head of going like, what do I know about this youth? And what do I know will get them more excited for future things? Because I know they're going to come back and talk to me about how they do or do not like being inside, or how their life is going since they're inside. And that just gives me the chance to really like help further progress them through services.
Yeah, it goes to show just how important those relationships and those connections are, and just how important youth work is to get them to be at a point where they could take that advice from you and to just hear what they have to say. My next question is a little bit different. What kinds of things about your work, Rose, cause you to be frustrated or make you some days feel like, gosh, I'm not sure, I don't see change as much as I'd like, things like that. What kind of things kind of get to you?
I think anyone that's a youth worker has those moments for sure. And I think it's definitely the barriers that youth come across and that we come across as service providers of like, there's not enough housing, or there's not a certain type of service that's set up, or things aren't going fast enough when the client wants to go faster. And it's usually bureaucratic tape that makes me more frustrated than anything, or like seeing that the government is taking too long to release funds for emergency housing, or that, you know, society as a whole sometimes has high barriers for people that are dealing with a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you 100% that those systems around us are super frustrating because you see the barriers that they put up and it make it so difficult for young people. Do you ever have moments where young people themselves frustrate you?
I don't really think so, because I really understand that we as people, even when we're young, we're like confused and sometimes don't make the best decisions, and that's okay with me because we all have to kind of figure out ourselves. And there might be times where I'm like, I know they could do more, but that's up to them. I want to make sure that they have their autonomy, and I kind of keep my own personal things out of it, because it doesn't really matter what I may want for them or what I think is best for them. It matters what they think about themselves and what they want to do. So like, I don't really get frustrated, because I just come from a place of like unconditional love of knowing that they'll get there. You know, they're going to figure their stuff out, and it might take a long time and they might make some bad decisions, but that's what life is all about.
That's beautiful. How do you get that unconditional love? Where does that come from? That's
I think deep. That comes from just my personal experience of me wishing that I felt like I had somebody that loved me when I was on the street. And I did end up having somebody, a family member who I ran into randomly when I was homeless, show unconditional love. And that's something to me that meant the world to me. So I want to make sure that I not only do it for youth, but everyone I come across in life, because it's nice to know that there's one person on earth that cares about me, no matter all the bad decisions I make, and that they'll still talk to me after I make those bad decisions.
Wow, that's really important for people to hear. And this family relative that gave you that unconditional love, what did they do?
Actually, it was really funny because he ended up giving me his phone number and address, and I carried it on me for years.
Really?
And I ended up hitchhiking up to Sebastopol and going to see him when he was having like a raging party, and he gave me clothes and let me take a shower, and I left. And then I went to visit him when I was, I think it was the summer before I turned 17, and I came up to visit, and I had all my gear on me, and I was there for 2 weeks, and then I went to leave, and he was like, you can't leave. I want to like make sure you have somewhere. And he offered his family's space, and I've known their family my whole life, and they were like, yeah, you can't go. He spoke with my mom, and my mom gave over parental rights, and he put me into high school, even though he was only like 7 years older than me, and wow. He made sure that I had everything I needed.
Wow, that's really cool. Was that a pivotal moment for you? Did that open your eyes to maybe there's people out there that truly can help me?
I think it took me a while to realize that, but now it's one of my best memories of my life, of being able to like have that, like, if he wasn't there, what would have my life looked like? It probably would have been way different. I probably wouldn't be where I am now. And him just taking that chance on me gave me the ability to take the chance on myself and to really like let myself be a teenager and to do school and like try to figure myself out.
And that's, I think, what all youth workers do, is we try to build that connection and that trusting relationship with them. Are you still in contact with him?
Unfortunately, he ended up passing away.
I'm sorry.
And I think about him all the time. I used to call him every time I like did an accomplishment or decided to do something good, I'd call him. Yeah. But his energy is still out there and his effect on me is still here. And I think it's a part of why I do what I do now. So he may not be here in person, but he's definitely here in spirit.
Yeah, well, that's cool. Thank you for sharing that story. He sounds like a great person. And I'm so sorry for your loss, Rose. That's difficult. I know I've had people in my life that have passed away too. And I know how difficult it is when you lose that person that you can trust and lean on. And if they're not there, that's difficult. But that's what we do as youth workers, right? We try to fill that role. And sometimes I think about a lot of the young people you serve probably don't have that kind of connection with somebody at all. And you can kind of help facilitate that.
Yeah, definitely. Youth seem to have disconnected relationships with adults and usually don't have a lot of trust with adults, you know, if that's due to their own personal trauma or things that have come out while they've been homeless. I definitely try to be a pillar of like, I am an adult that you guys can trust. And I try to instill, not all adults have the right answers, and that's okay. And not all adults are trustworthy, and that's also okay. But hopefully I can be that adult that you can trust in. And if I do make a decision that you don't like, we can have that discussion and I can apologize. I'm humble enough to be like, okay, I'm sorry if, you know, I did something that affected you negatively.
Rose, we're coming almost to the end of our time together, and it's been amazing to hear your story and to think about just absolutely how courageous you are. I don't know if people, if they didn't get to know you, they might not think of you that way. So brave to just challenge yourself in the world all on your own like that. That is just phenomenal. And I don't think we think of youth experiencing homelessness from that lens. These are brave, gritty young people that are so full of survival instinct that if we could just tap that in a positive sort of way and use that to their benefit, and like some of the things you're doing with your work at Larkin Street, or you're dabbling into, I know someday you want to write horror movies, and I can't wait to see the first horror film you write. I'll go to that. Even though I'm not a horror movie fan, let me know, because I'll go watch it, okay?
For sure, yeah.
Well, thank you. Like I said, we're almost out of time, but before we go, I'd like to ask you if you have any words of wisdom or inspiration you'd like to leave with our listeners of this podcast.
Definitely. I would like always try to remind people that these youth come from different places and different traumas and different experiences, and we need to remember that. And my motto is always to do the least amount of harm possible to a human and make sure that the footprint that I do have with them is completely positive.
Yeah, the least amount of harm. I think that's really important. I've seen people in this field that sometimes cause more harm, and it's so sad when you see that. And so your mission, your vision, and I think your tact at going at this work is spot on. And I'm so grateful that you do the work that you do. And please thank all your coworkers and everybody that does the same kind of work, because we have a special place for them in our hearts. Our society someday will really understand the value that you provide, and I believe that with all my heart. So thank you for being a guest on the podcast, Rose.
Thank you, Paul, for having me. I appreciate you all and all of the youth workers doing the hard work.
I'm with you. And thank you, like Rose said, to all the people out there listening that work with young people, whatever the capacity is. We know you're changing lives in a positive sort of way, and sometimes we don't always see it, but you are making a difference in the world, and you're adding so much social and economic and personal value to the communities you live in. So thank you for the work that you do. If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to share your passion for youth work, we'd love to spotlight you as a guest. If you have feedback, either positive or negative, about the show, please let us know. You can do both by visiting training.yipa.org. That's training.yipa.org, and click on the podcast tab. This podcast is made possible in part due to the generous contribution from M Health Fairview. I'm your host, Paul Minier. Thanks for listening to The Passionate Youth Worker.